Go. Hello and welcome to the podcast. This is episode 114, and this will form part three of our four-part series on 2018's God of War, which we're now reaching the end of. This was an extra episode that we introduced just to allow us to discuss some of the finer nuances of the game in a little bit more detail, rather than having to rush through the story and not having time to talk about any of the additional things that probably warrant a wee bit of discussion. So in tonight's episode, we'll be covering chapters 10, 11, and 12. I know they're not numbered within the game, but that for our purposes is the Black Ruin, then it is Return to the Summit, and then Escape from Helheim. And on the final episode, which will be out in the next couple of weeks' time, that will just be from Escape from Helheim through until the end of the game. So from this point onwards, if you're listening to this, you have now got the green light to go off and finish the game. So long as you've frolicked to your heart's content and secured the platinum and beaten all the Valkyries and completed all the favours and all the many other things there are to do.
Just then one of those, you can frolic again after the credits, can't you?
Okay, I was just going to ask that.
Yeah, excellent. That is news to me, but that is good to hear.
You can, and Chris Atwill said on Discord, and I don't remember this, I didn't beat all the Valkyries last time, but then things like Valkyrie locations that you haven't come across are then shown on your map. It makes me wonder, like, whether any other things are shown on your map. I can't remember.
Well, we shall find out soon enough. You're listening to the voices of Chris Wellington. Hello, Chris.
Watch your tone, boy.
You have to be a softer Kratos tonight. We see a softer side of Kratos.
What's your tone, boy?
I'd like you to be a bit more fatherly to me, please. And
I'm not very good at that.
Jim Middleton, good evening, Jim.
We are here because of your actions, boy.
Come on, Mads, what you got? What you got?
I'm Mads Christensen. Hello, Mads.
Whatever.
Boom. Yeah, that was Atreus.
Atreus.
Yeah,
say whatever, does he?
He does. Every second or third time you ask him to do something, oh, whatever.
Yeah, I was going to say, which game have you been playing here, Chris? It's like literally the most overused phrase.
Does he actually say whatever?
Yep.
Repeatedly. Yeah.
He does go full teenager, doesn't he?
He does.
He really does.
How old do you reckon he's meant to be? Do we know?
Well, this is the question, because
he's just a scrawny kid, isn't he?
He's 12, tiny 13, compared to Kratos.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, I think probably to fit in with kind of what else is happening in this story, he would need to be into his, certainly his early teens.
Yeah, 13-ish.
You're right.
He is very small, though, isn't he? Like, I don't know. Maybe it's just because he's always standing next to Kratos, but he does.
Well, yeah, you're always going to look a little bit inferior when you're stood next to him. That's some big shoes to fill if he was your dad. Before we get into the chapter-by-chapter discussion, during which we'll no doubt branch off on a tangent and talk about other parts of the game, Chris, you were very kindly going to give us a quick recap on what we'd covered on the previous episode.
Yeah, I've got my script.
I'd like you to do it in Jim's voice, because I'm used to Jim doing this, so please.
I'm having a night off.
So in the style of Jim Middleton, take it away.
I can't imitate Jimbo, but I'll try not imitate
it's like
Jim.
That. It's like that Bristolian-Nottingham weird hybrid, isn't it?
I'm not even going to go there. I'm not even going to try. So in the second part of our God of War playthrough, After recovering the Bifrost from Helheim, did we recover the Bifrost? I've got a big question mark. What was it that we needed to take to the summit?
The Bridgekeeper's heart.
Yeah.
Oh, that... No, it was to get to the summit, we needed the light, didn't we? We needed the light to get through the fog.
Or the light from Elfheim,
Was it, the light.
So maybe that fixes the Bifrost, because the Bifrost, isn't that the thing in the room in this version of the story?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes,
that was in the first part, so not even part of my summary. So after we got that,
we've gone way back.
We then went back to the mountain.
See, if
and
Jim
managed
had done
to get
this,
to the...
there wouldn't have been these mistakes already. I'm just saying
we'd have been finished by
yeah, yeah.
And when we got to the top of the mountain, we battled Hrieflif Nirflif, the big dragon,
Rizla.
Once we beat the dragon, we then interrupted a frog conversation between three men who we know was Balder, Mimir, and Magni?
Yeah, probably Magni or Modi. Well, weren't they both there, actually?
Or was Balder not there then? Was it just Magna, Modi, and Mimir, was it?
I think that was it.
Mm. Yeah. See, I'm really across all these details.
Yes.
So Mimir, when we get to, when they, the two of them bugger off and then Mimir is left, we get to the top, Mimir's there. He's bound to a tree, having previously been captured and then tortured by the evil Allfather, Odin. Mm. Evil Mads, isn't
he? Yes, I've come to make my peace with the fact that they've made their own little story loosely based on Nordic.
So Mimir reveals that they're not standing on the highest peak in all of the Nine Realms after all. As Andy said, this is the princess is in another castle moment, and while it's the highest peak in Midgard, it's the highest peak in all the realms is actually in Jotunheim, the realm of the giants. And in order to get to Jotunheim, the band of intrepid explorers need to find and retrieve both the Unity Stone and the Jotunheim realm, Travel Rome. This is all Mimir imparting this information. And then that will allow them to bypass the protections of the Realm Tower and finally get to Jotunheim. The problem is, Mimir doesn't know where they are, but he knows somebody who might do. So they need to take Mimir with him. And the way to do that is obviously you have to chop his head off, instantly killing him. And he says before they do that, if you do that and then take me to the witch, she'll be able to revive me using some of the old magic. So that is exactly what they do. They take Mimir's head to the witch of the woods, who proceeds to revive him and then give him a good slap. And it's at that point that the witch of the woods is revealed to be the goddess Freya. So we then head off for Annatta with the World Serpent. Mimir can understand the World Serpent, who is a giant or is from the realm of giants, Jörmungandr.
Well, he is a giant. Giants are many different things. He's Loki's child, actually.
Well, he's a big old fella, isn't he, the old World Serpent? So it makes sense he's a giant. The World Serpent tells Mimir that the rune is actually in Tyr's vault, and the Unity Stone is needed to get it. And mysteriously, the World Serpent recognizes Atreus. So I think the deal is here that, and we find this out, that Tyr wanted to protect, Odin wanted to destroy the giants. So in order to protect the giants, Tyr basically sealed off access to Jotunheim by putting the rune that you need to get there deep inside his vault, which is under the Realm Tower. In order to get into the vault, Mimir says that we need to be able to carve the travel rune to get to Jotunheim. And in order to do that, we're going to need a giant's tool. And then he recalls that there is a corpse of a giant that just happens to be lying around in Midgard. Conveniently, that's the corpse of famous stonemason Thamyr, who is a master stonemason. And he wonders whether he may still have the chisel about his person. It's convenient. So we go off, we find the corpse of Thamyr, we make our way there, and lo and behold, he does have the chisel. We chisel a bit of the chisel off, and at that point, we are attacked by the Magni and Modi, the dreaded duo Magni and Modi. It's a good boss fight, this, and at the end of it, Kratos unceremoniously murders Magni, and that gets Modi a bit upset. And he starts throwing down some insults towards Kratos and Atreus about his mother and whatnot. After the fight, notably, Atreus is showing signs of becoming more unwell. He's been battling with this unnamed sickness, hasn't he? Right from the very start, Kratos was saying he was too unwell to make the journey. He's been constantly saying he is fine. At this point, he's shown more signs of being unwell. But with the chisel in hand, we can finally access Tyr's temple. But we don't get too far before the smell of rain hits. And old Modi, who's a bit moody, turns up again. He is properly going for it this time, winding Atreus up about his mum, Faye. And Atreus basically does a Ken Shamrock and completely snaps, doesn't he? And has some kind of like crash out. And then I'm not really sure. I can't remember how this happens, but he collapses.
Yeah.
And he's poisoned here by Modi, some kind of AC spell.
I think he's got nothing to do with Modi. It's just
he just succumbs to his sickness.
Yeah, I think it's like he has like a buildup of rage or something.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's kind of like his nature fighting his inner god.
My guess was that this was him not being able to control the Spartan rage that he probably inherited from his dad.
Oh, that could still, yeah, because it almost seems like a Spartan rage, doesn't he? When he snaps.
Mm.
So cue one of the greatest sequences in gaming as we carry Atreus back to Freya. She says that to save him, we need the water of life from Helheim. Mimir says that Kratos' axe wouldn't harm the old monsters in hell, and we're going to need another weapon. So Kratos poodles down the river. What took us a quarter of a game takes him about 3 minutes to get back to his homestead, and he gets the Blades of Chaos. And then with those in hand, we can go into hell without Atreus, and get the Water of Life and unlock the Winds of Hell mechanic. Back we go then, back to Freya's. I also should mention as well, I think it's when we're taking Atreus that we hear the sound of a horn blowing.
Yep.
With the horn that summons the World Serpent is blown. Mimir mentions it, and then there's a later reference to the boat being back at the dock, so we know that someone had gone and blown the horn. We don't know who it is. Something tells me that that's going to be pretty key. I can't remember whether it's going to be key in this game or the next game, but
we still don't know now, do we?
No, we definitely need to stick a pin in that. Anyway, we managed to get the Water of Life back to Freya, who manages to sort Atreus out, and he's well enough to resume the journey. So it's off back to Tyr's temple now.
So that, thank you very much. And that leads us very nicely into what is the next chapter called the Black Ruin, the purpose of which is to find the secret Jotunheim travel rune that's in Tyr's vault, as you said. When the gameplay restarts, we've got to return to the boat anyway. You can then continue on to take the boat to Tyr's vault if you were just mainlining it. But this was the point at which I think a few of us did anyway. You were then able to go and frolic from this point onwards. So I think most of us took full advantage of that and went and frolicked to our heart's content, probably covering a few things that we'll cover over the course of this conversation anyway. But from a story perspective, that once they've retrieved their boat and head back to Tyr's temple, Kratos notices that Atreus is quieter than normal and quite out of character for Kratos. He actually presses this a little bit and questions Atreus as to what the problem is. And Atreus says that he overheard him talking with Freya, which we'd alluded to back when he was sick previously, and Kratos and Freya are having a conversation, obviously, about the fact that he's a god and that Atreus is also a god as a consequence, but doesn't yet know. But Atreus is overhearing that conversation is now worried that he feels that Kratos thinks that he's weak, and it's at this moment that Kratos has to come clean and tell Atreus the truth, and he states that Kratos himself is a god from a distant land, and when he came to Midgar he wanted to and chose to live as a normal man. But it's rapidly becoming apparent that he can't ever or won't be able to escape his true nature. And he also explains that, as a consequence, Atreus is also a god. So obviously the boy is pretty shocked by the revelation. But again, we've kind of alluded to this at various points throughout the game, is just the innocence that comes with it, and the naivety, I guess, as well, where his first question to him is whether or not he can turn into an animal.
There's
a bit of back and forth about that.
I think, does he ask if he can fly as well or something?
Yeah. All important questions if you've just been told you were a god, to be fair. He also asks if Fae was a god, and Kratos tells him that she was a mortal. Well, Kratos also didn't want to tell Atreus about their lineage in order to really spare him from the tragedy that a god's life can lead to. I mean, Kratos hasn't exactly had the most, especially if you've played the previous games, we talked a wee bit about the lore leading up to it. He's not exactly had a happy life. So it's, I only just found out why he was called the god of Sparta and why he was ashen white. Were you aware of the reason as to why that was?
No.
No, but that is definitely explored in the older games. I can't remember the detail.
He was known as
the Ghost of Sparta, wasn't he? Mm.
Yes. So I believe he was tricked into killing his wife and child.
Yeah.
And then he had the ashes of them were bound to his skin. So
that's harsh.
Pleasant, yeah. So you can see why he might be a bit angry. Mm. As you continue this journey, Atreus points out that he doesn't seem to have any godly powers, and Mimir suggests to him that his power or his aptitude might actually be or his aptitude for languages might indeed be might actually be his power.
Hmm.
So we find a way back to Tyr's vault after we've done our frolicking, or if we go straight there. We can now use the sand bowl, which we were very rudely interrupted from the last time. And as the lift activates, this is the first sign we get really of Atreus showing signs of maybe starting to embrace his newfound status as a god. And
it takes him about 5 minutes to go from a nice young kid to the most horrible and badly written teenager I've ever seen.
I agree. Yeah, and we'll cover this over the course of it. Go for it, Chris.
Yeah, we're gonna lay into a little bit of the kind of the characterization of Atreus, but I just want to kind of wave the flag for the good stuff. I feel like kind of the conversation between Kratos and Atreus was really well done.
Yes.
In the boat, you know, like
I
like that.
They kind of almost like you can see him building up, and then he's kind of quite straight with him, isn't he, when he says it? And he just says, you know, we are gods. And he says, well, why didn't you tell me? And he says, because I've been trying to protect you from the burden that it will come, and you know, that's why you've been sick and everything else. Like, I felt like there are definitely issues with how they handle Atreus's behavior, but I feel like the way Kratos kind of the way he's written, I think is really, really good.
Yeah, I think initially you guys thought he was far too harsh and badly written because of that, but I love to see his gradual learning to appreciate the role of being a father. And the way that he grows in that is really good. Mm. I thought that was well written, even though he was very harsh and very brash to begin with.
And I feel like it was the fright of him becoming really sick and the fear of losing him, which actually kind of completes that transition, doesn't it? From, you know, because he's still quite brash with him, and especially when Atreus kind of oversteps the mark and Kratos kind of lays down the law. But you feel like from this point on, he's much softer towards him.
Even when Atreus starts to do really bad shit, crazy stuff, it takes him a long time to actually tell him what to do and what not to do.
Yeah. I thought maybe perhaps it was a case as well that Kratos realized that obviously he hadn't told Atreus that he was a god, and so maybe he was off the impression that as long as he kept it secret from him, the combination of him not knowing. But being a god would mean that he would be absolutely safe for the rest of his days.
Mm.
And then it was maybe only through, obviously, him becoming sick, and I assume could have died from that sickness. It sounded as though that coma that he was in would have killed him had they not got the Bridgekeeper's heart and used Freya's magic. So I think maybe it was almost a realization from Kratos that it is actually possible for him to lose his child, and that he was going to have to maybe, and it maybe brought things into quite sharp focus as to how he was handling things. And like he was saying that he, in much the same way that it's almost that sad realization that in much the same way that he hasn't been able to escape who he is and his past and everything comes with it, he's just going to have to, he's going to have to accept that that's the same is true for Atreus. But it's almost as though the true of anything, you more for not build something up in your head to be the biggest thing in the world, and the hardest thing is to talk to somebody about it, and then more often than not, once it's out there in the open, then you realize, more often, especially when you're talking to kids, there's sometimes you think, how am I going to explain this to them?
Yeah.
And you tell them about it, and they'll be like, okay, yeah, all right, what's with tea tonight, by the way?
Yeah.
And they just straight on to something else. And you felt that was maybe what they were trying to, that was sort of the line they were taking with this.
You almost feel his relief that it's out there now. And
yeah. Mm. Yeah, and I think especially knowing what we do about his background is that, you know, he is just, he's a war machine effectively, so the touchy-feely stuff doesn't, it's not second nature to him, that's for sure.
And have you noticed that we start to see like a few more little callbacks to the to his previous life? Like, I think it's in this Tyr's Temple bit, isn't it, when we get down? Doesn't he find like a goblet or something which has the kind of, you know, with
it's
his,
got him as the sort of the
Blades of Chaos,
the ghost of Sparta,
and he looks at it, doesn't he?
I definitely feel like I'm missing out on little bits through not playing the earlier games, especially when you're on the boat later on.
I wouldn't worry about it too much, but there are definitely, like, it's fairly obvious, you know, that it was, it's Kratos on the side of that goblet.
So we're getting, and as I say, Atreus is starting to show signs that he's quite enjoying his new life as a god, and Mimir, being the voice of reason, sort of cautions him and just says, look, you know, don't let it go to your head too much. So we're now off to find the Black Rune. So we enter into Tyr's vault main, sort of the main part of the vault. And as soon as we get in there, the ruin's there, but then it's instantly, it was obviously designed to be as safe as possible. And it quite literally is a vault in the sense that there's all these traps in and around it all. There's all these hidden chambers. There's this, the rune itself is protected by these three rings. It almost looks like a gyro where it's got these
three rings spinning
around it to lock it in there. So we basically need to deactivate the vault's defenses by accessing various side chambers. More often than not, some very convenient utilization of the Winds of Hell.
Yeah.
As you said, there was, I think it's when we go into the second chamber, there's a Greek vase here that's depicting this victorious Kratos, and he is obviously very concerned about Atreus seeing it, because I think that would raise a lot of questions as to who he'd, which comes about anyway, but who he'd possibly was victorious over, how he'd done it, who he'd killed in the past. I did wonder if Atreus saw it, but he claims he didn't.
I think Kratos smashes it, but then the camera pans over and you see that the part with him is actually intact. So Atreus sees that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then it leads to one of the highlights of the game so far, where there's Kratos is trapped, he's in danger of drowning. And you've got this, you've got three symbols on the wall that's very clearly explained as to what you have to do. And it's an extremely cinematic and enjoyable moment. That's right, is it not?
No,
definitely not. Definitely not.
There's a really simple puzzle that lets you interact with the cutscene here, isn't there?
Mm-hmm. So how many times did you die, Jim?
Oh, lots.
I'm up to 10.
Lots of drowning.
Yeah.
Gods can drown, apparently. Yeah,
they can. Yeah. So I mixed up, for some really weird reason, when I finally got it right, it was so, so damn easy, that puzzle. But for some reason, I mixed up the moon and Midgard. So I thought, okay, so that's the moon, that's the sun, and that thing is probably Midgard. But it wasn't. So it took me forever until I finally figured out, okay, that's the moon, of course. And then I did it in the first go.
Well, I thought, because you have to get, is it the moon on the left and the sun on the right, or the other way around?
Yeah.
But then you have to, there's like a track, isn't there, that runs across the top, and then there's like three prongs that come down. I thought you had to get the sun and the moon into the prongs. but you don't. Yeah. You have to leave them in the top track. Mm. And so I'd got them in, and I was like,
I thought for the longest time that you needed to have them at the edges, like the sun all the way to the right and the moon all the way to the left, and that's impossible with the way that it moves. So that took me a long time trying to do that as well, and with using Midgard for the moon. So I died awful. At least 10 times, and I was really confused.
Awful. And then I've been looking at a puzzle game for next season, and I'm like,
yeah, I don't think this counts as a puzzle game, or this part shouldn't count as a puzzle. It's
I didn't think you could fail it.
Right.
I honestly didn't think. I thought that it would just, the time would just last forever because.
Yeah, you just need the likes of Jimbo and I, then we'll test that.
Yeah. I think when they play test this stuff, they should, take into account the lowest sort of common denominator.
It's one of those stupid things, though, isn't it? That, if you get stuck on something, you get stuck on something. And I think, I remember us talking about this when we play Call of Duty, that these cinematic moments are only good the first time. If you're repeating it and repeating it, the second time is one time too many, the 10th time. You're going to ready to smash something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'm just looking at it here. So the guidebook, very conveniently, there's a quick solution to it. 7 steps. So you start off, you've got the 3 symbols are in the order of sun, moon, earth, and they need to be moon, earth, sun, with earth representing Midgard, I think. So according to this, you've probably all, well, I'm assuming you've all played it, so it'll probably make sense. So you pull the center chain to slide all the symbols to the left, and this moves the moon over the left track. You pull the left chain to move the moon down. You pull the middle chain to slide the sun and Midgard to the right. You pull the right chain to lower the sun. You pull the left chain to raise the moon. You pull the middle chain to slide the moon and Midgard to the left. And you pull the right chain to raise the sun. I did all that, but I had no idea what I was actually trying to do. In a sense, I was just...
Really?
Things at random and solved it first time.
But That's crazy.
So I, like I say, it's not the game's finest moment, I wouldn't suggest, but it's...
I'm glad it wasn't just me that struggled.
Oh, quite the opposite. But what it does lead on to, which is one of my all-time favourite bits of the game, having solved the puzzle, it doesn't quite deactivate the trap because Kratos is still bound to the wheel. And the chain starts pulling the platform upwards towards a spiked ceiling. So Atreus is trying to free him. And in the end, the only way he's able to stop it is by jamming the mechanism, by forcing his knife that was his mother's into the chain. But it breaks it in the process, but subsequently frees Kratos. But then they're ultimately now able to come back into the main chamber, where they're able to collect the Black Ruin. But just before that, you get, I think, what is probably the best father-to-son cutscene that's been in the game so far. I absolutely love this.
Boy. Yeah. On the day you were born, I made 2 knives, mixing metals from my home and from this land. Myself, and when you were ready, one for you. Today is that day.
Some are men now, like you.
No, we are not men. We are more than that. The responsibility is far greater. And you must be better than me. Understand? Say it.
You will be better.
The power of this weapon, any weapon, comes from here. But only when tempered by this. By the discipline, the self-control of the one who wields it. That is where the true strength of a warrior lies. You must never forget that. Good then. Come.
That's so good.
Absolutely awesome, wonderful stuff. I think it's fantastic. Yeah. And I think it's it kind of hits on a few levels. And I wonder also that the bit there where he says, you must be better than me.
Yeah.
I wonder that if early in the game where he was saying to him, be better, whether it was almost a case that he was meaning, it was almost in a roundabout way, it was Kratos' way of saying to Atreus, I hope you're going to be better than me, rather than just... you need to be better as a person, you're doing it wrong type thing.
Yeah, I mean he's a slave to his past, isn't he? You know, he's done terrible things, Kratos. He murdered millions of people, those are the games. But he's done terrible things. He killed his wife and his child, even by trickery though, and I think he's saying to Atreus, look, you know, you've got to be more than what I was.
Yeah.
And it's like, I think we all feel that, don't we? I mean, I've certainly, you know, kind of thought, you know, you bring your kids up, don't you, because you want them ultimately to exceed what you've become.
Yeah. And not make any, not make those mistakes that you've made.
But the reality is, it's
I'm not going to put that burden on my kids. That's nonsense.
No, I never say that, but I think to myself, you know, my job here.
Yeah, I don't either.
It is, you know, to kind of pass on my learnings, but it's part of the human condition, right, that people make mistakes.
Yeah. They got to make their own mistakes.
It really landed for me, that, though, the music, and it's such a great scene.
Yeah, and I think it's especially, if you've seen it, or you'll have seen it in the game, but it's even just when Kratos is pointing to Atreus's heart and his head, and you see the size of his hand in relation to Atreus, and you realise just kind of, he's still just such a small boy and still, you know, very malleable as a consequence. And, it's just great. But obviously, the flip side to that is then having retrieved the Black Rune, we have to fight two Grendels and we get a Chaos Flame. But then when we're exiting Tyr's Vault, we see Kratos at his best and it kind of, you know, there's some very questionable parenting where he's found this flask of Lemnian wine that he's got and he hands it over to Atreus and he's basically says, you know, our journey's coming to an end. So we celebrate and Atreus has a little sniff of it and says something like, oh, it smells like rotten eggs. You know, is it okay to drink it? And he's like, I don't know, find out. And so Atreus swills a little bit and then hands it back to Kratos. And it's just absolutely brilliant. It's just like a lovely father and son moment. And then he chugs the whole thing and then throws it down and just goes, ah. and then Atreus goes, back at him. That for me is when the writing of that in this game is absolutely at its strongest. So it always felt like that was a proper the combination of him having gifted him this knife and also the revelation that for all he comes across as not that he doesn't care about him, but obviously right back at the start on the day he says it on the day Atreus was born, you know, obviously he mixed the materials from his homeland and then Atreus' homeland, his Kratos' now homeland. I mean, so, you know, he's held on to this, obviously, this entire time waiting for that moment. And then, you know, the combination of handing the knife over to him and sitting and having a drink. I mean, it's almost like taking your child out to the pub for their first pint or something, isn't it? It's a real kind of coming of age, rite of passage type thing. I just really liked it.
Yeah, it could so easily have been humorless, this game.
Yeah.
Couldn't it? You know, there's a version of this game which is really bleak and actually quite dark and quite somber. And there are moments like that in the game for sure, but there is always Mimir and there's always kind of Baldur's wise cracking. And, you know, even moments like that where it's just little bits of humour that just make it, you know, very, very good.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. It's... They were two of sort of the real standout moments for me. Really, really enjoyed them. So it takes us on to the next chapter, which is the return to the summit. So we're able to basically continue our journey back.
And it was just before we jump on, I thought it was a really enjoyable area outside of the drowning puzzle. I enjoyed the area, all the little traps and
For sure. Totally. Yeah, some good stuff in there. Some good use of having to freeze things with the axe and
good fun environmental puzzles all the way through.
Yeah,
One of the Zelda style areas, isn't it? We mentioned that there was a few of them in the game. This is definitely one of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. 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 So having done that, we've now got everything we need. So we've got the Black Rune, we've got the Stonemason's Chisel, and so we just need to find our way back up to the mountain summit to open the bridge again to Jotunheim. So along the what's quite a familiar route now, there's a few new areas that have opened up as a consequence of us having the Chaos Blades and the Winds of Hell as well. So there's a couple of things you can do here. One of which is you can access, I think the first Valkyrie that you would have had access to would have been back up in when we just got the chisel, wasn't it?
Yeah.
As we're leaving, there's one that you can access there. But
yeah.
There's also another one here that you can find. Did you want to talk about Valkyries just now, or do you want to talk about it a wee bit later on?
Nah, let's talk Valkyries.
Sure.
Very much optional. And I guess they serve as real kind of skill checks throughout the game, that there is the option of, once we have the chisel tool, we can open up the vaults to these little ones that look like these mirrored doors or polished marble seals on them. I'm so upset about just the lack of support for the chiseling that was there in the Discord.
Are you still enjoying it?
Yes, yeah, more than ever. having read everybody's comments in Discord, I am just going to do my own thing from now on. I've decided. And I'm just going to, you do you. If you don't like it, that's fine. But
everyone else is wrong.
Yeah, but they're great little areas. So yeah, kind of a very similar pattern as you come into each one of them. All of them have got some pretty decent loot in them anyway, which if you want, you can just come in and grab that.
Yeah.
If you want to, it will always be framed whereby as you approach it, there's almost a sort of cross a precipice, and there's an arena that once you enter it, you're then committed to that fight, at least until you die. And it's up to you how many times you want to keep going back into it. But I will say
as well, there's a fast travel into each one, which I think is brilliant.
Yeah.
Because it means if you do get frustrated, you can just bang straight out and come back. I think that's brilliant.
There's a few that I've been into where that's been broken, though, and I haven't been able to do it. I haven't been able to access it. Yeah.
I think there's one, and I think isn't the one that you find near the summit broken until you've completed the plot event that follows this, because they don't want you fast traveling. Once you're in that location, you can't fast travel away.
Okay.
Yes, that might be what it is then. Okay.
But I think once you've done that plot bit, I think it's just normal then.
Okay.
Yeah.
I say they're very much optional, but they're so atmospheric the first time you see these. I remember I played this previously and took an absolute whooping and never came back to them. But you come in and you've got the doorway, and just through it, it's just framed, and the environments are quite different in some of them as well. Some of them are kind of, they're quite sort of kind of almost like a woodland landscape type thing. Others of them are very sort of kind of cold, kind of marble environments. But there are a total of what would that be? One, two.
There are nine, including the queen.
Nine total, including the queen. Yeah. So there are eight that are accessible within the world itself. So you've got, and Madge, you're going to have to correct me on every one of the pronunciations. you were saying apparently one of them is horrendous how it's pronounced the game, but you've got Gunnar, which is on Thamur's corpse.
Mm-hmm. That's next to the first corpse. One.
Yeah. Yeah. Geirdrifull in the foothills.
He is the one that blocks all your attacks.
Yep, that's the mountain, near the corner elevator. Kara in the river pass.
Notorious Kara, who summons the minions.
Yeah. Yes, of the witch's basement.
Horrific.
Rota in Helheim.
Yep.
Olrun in Alfheim. This is one I think they kept getting wrong, Mads. Gundel?
Yeah. Yeah, you're a lot closer to it than they are. So Gundel. Gundel.
Gundel.
Gundel.
No, not a gondol.
Hildir.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the one that Mads and I have not seen. Yeah,
Neither have I, because I think we've all got the same problem. Yep. And then ultimately Queen Sigrun, who you will fight at the Council of the Valkyries. But you guys, you've done more of them than I have, and I know that... I've been following Maupin's posts with interest as well, in terms of I think he's the world's leading authority on Valkyrie fighting now, but you guys have done all of the ones that you've had access to now?
No.
Yeah.
Oh, well, Jim, you're probably the same.
I've only beat the first one. I found four, I think.
Come on, Jim.
Why didn't you beat them? You can't go away from them. I mean, that's just wrong.
I get my ass handed to me. The one where they summon. I really hate that in a game. Mm. And the blocking as well, that's frustrating.
But you need to block stuff.
Yeah, I know, but I don't like blocking. I like just all-out attack.
Yeah, but the fun thing is with the game's combat mechanics, I only really started enjoying those when I met the Valkyries. That was when I found out that you can actually block and you can actually counter, you can parry stuff, and just makes the game so much more fun. And now I try to use it in regular combat as well.
Are you serious that was the first time you realized you could block and parry?
Block I knew. I could hold up the shield, of course, but parry, that was the first time I knew I could parry, yes.
So you can parry the yellow attacks, you can't parry the the red attacks.
That's, yeah, I learned that with the first Valkyrie, and I learned that the first time I saw her beat her the second time I went in there.
And projectiles you can parry as well, can't
and
you?
And you deflect them back.
That's it, yeah.
Yeah, if you parry them, yes.
If you parry them, So that's how I kill almost every nightmare, you know, the little flying, streaking things.
Yeah.
Oh, do you?
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, until you with the Blades of Chaos, though, you can rope them in.
Yeah, I love the Blades of Chaos when you can lash them in. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. Didn't try and parry any of the Valkyries. Which one did you beat by parrying? Was that, Geirdrufal?
Yeah, most of them, really. I mean, they all have yellow attacks, and parrying those is very important unless you want to cheat and just use the fire hose of doom. So fighting them and parrying their attacks is how you get them whittled down.
What's the fire hose of doom?
That's the thing that you and Maupin were talking about.
The frost attack. Wait, that's not cheating. That's a legitimate way to beat them.
It's a seriously powerful move as well. It's great.
Especially when you get the thing that the artifact that extends it by about 15 seconds.
Yeah, so you can eat the at least a quarter of the biggest Valkyries just in
no
the first
way,
second.
Man. Half.
Okay.
So they start off on half health.
Oh, Which move's this?
So this is the runic, it's a light runic attack with the Leviathan axe. It's called like Njord's Tempest or something.
Yes, I think that's right.
I'll have to check on that.
Tempest, is that not the big storm type one?
Njord's Tempest, I'm sure it's called Njord's Tempest. It's basically a kind of a beam of frost.
Yeah. It looks like a laser beam that you're just shooting at them, really.
It will wipe out pretty... So every single ogre that I see gets Njord's Tempested and is completely dead.
I would never use that on an ogre. That just completely destroys the fight.
I would.
I don't. And also things like, you know, the Soul Eaters, the Devourers, they go down almost instantly with Njord's Tempest.
You're not playing the game,
that's
mate.
That's getting added to the armory then. That's my first
You need to get on Njord's Tempest. But I think maybe I shouldn't really boast then about the fact I've actually found most... I think the one I struggled with the most was Gundel. But she's the most aggressive, I feel.
Oh, so the one in Muspelheim?
The one in Muspelheim.
Ah, yeah. That she took me all of 8 minutes to beat, I think. Because I think I wrote you guys that, I just met her. I'm going to try that tonight. And I thought, I'm going to try it. And I wrote you like 8, 9 minutes later. Done.
Done it. Yeah. Like, I think it's one of those things, once you've... Maupin said it on... Maupin said it on Discord that once... They've all got a pattern, and once you've learned how to evade their attacks...
Yes. So her attack, she's got this attack where she yells Valhalla. There's one other that does that as well. And she flies up and comes down on you and takes like half of your health. That's you need to learn how to dodge that.
Yeah.
But that's but this fight I won because I just read about you and Morpin talking about the fire hose of doom. So I equipped that, and I beat her in no time.
That's going to be my go-to. Then there was one that she puts out a blue. I think it's like a
it's
blue
the
energy,
equivalent of just... of hurling dung piles
dung
over
pies.
Over a fence.
Yeah, I'm all for that, lads. I've got those getting that lined up for the next game.
I was telling Seb about that at the weekend because he's playing Elden Ring and he was really struggling with the boss. I was telling him some of your cheese stories.
Yes.
Yeah.
Finding ways
of the fun, isn't it?
Finding ways to clip yourself through the scenery so they can't hit you and all with dung pies. Yeah.
Yep, these Valkyries, though, I mean, on normal, I would say they are a definite like step up from any other battle we've faced in the game because they're one-on-one battles. They are tests of skill. But I remember struggling with them loads the first time round. And I think level is a lot to do with it. Like, I think as Morpin's been explaining that, you know, it's not so much your stats, it's more your level in terms of, like, it increases your damage output and reduces the damage received.
Okay.
I think I'm just generally higher leveled now, and these Valkyries are not posing as much of a challenge.
So pay less attention to those figures down the right-hand side. Because I'll be honest, that is one thing that's causing me to not experiment as much. Because I'll see a piece of armor, and if you can compare it, can't you? And if you go to use that bit of armor, I'll see like all my stats tank. And I'm
but the problem with that comparison is that you're probably comparing an empty set of armor with set of armor with three enchantments on them.
Yeah,
so
if
you really want to compare them, you have to go to the one you have on right now, remove the enchantments, and then you can compare it.
It's a bit cumbersome, actually.
It is. I do find like the adding the runes a little bit cumbersome. Yeah. Not so much adding them, but comparing and stuff.
When you equip different items like different chest armor, does it take the enchantments out of those, or that's a very good point. So I must have some that are still sat in a previous set somewhere then. So
I had loads of them. I had loads of them, but they tend the ones that you've got in earlier sets, they're probably now you'll have got things that are way more powerful anyway. But I think the other thing is, Jim, you've got to remember that. You know, you maybe have a fully powered up, but you can't upgrade your armor anymore. Whereas you get a new piece that you could upgrade potentially two or three times.
Yeah.
But from what Morpin was saying, the key thing is not kind of min maxing each individual stat. It's more what overall effect it does to your level. You know, that kind of I'm on level 7 now, but you get. It'll show you like a green arrow or a red arrow for everything that you equip. Basically, you just want to keep getting that up as high as possible.
I could have made that more transparent because it's much easier to just understand the numbers. Like I am at 150 strength or something like that, instead of having the level decide that stuff as well.
So my level's still 5. I'm still level 5.
Oh, you should be higher than that at this point. So I'm 7, halfway through 7.
Yeah, me too. I'm 7.
Okay, I'm halfway through.
But you're right, Chris. Those Valkyrie fights, I don't want to sound as if they're easy because they're not. They're definitely
no,
a skill
they're not
check.
Easy.
Definitely a skill check, and they're fun. But for somebody who's played the Dark Souls games, they're easy fun. Not the fight itself, but the fact that you can go in, try the fight, and there's no run back to the boss. There's nothing. You just you start again. You restart just outside.
Right,
you just
outside,
run in again and try something new. It just makes it so easy. So if I beat like. One of them in 10 minutes, I probably tried 5 times, right?
Yeah.
With all your health items back as well.
Yeah,
so you haven't got to go
research.
And scrounge all materials
so
and all the rest of it.
Things like your resurrection stone, your Spartan.
Yes,
no,
you get the resurrection stone back.
Yeah, that comes
back.
You
get the resurrection stone back.
Yeah, you do.
Yeah, you do.
Do you use it?
No, you do. If you use your resurrection stone and you die, then when you're back in the game, you've got the resurrection stone again. For sure.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
And... you definitely lose your Spartan rage meter, don't you?
No, that's reset as well when you die.
Yeah, you literally get everything back as if you were going in.
Mine definitely wasn't.
For the first time.
Definitely.
Really?
Because there was times in the fight where I was using my Spartan, because that was what put me off persevering with a couple of them at times. I would have the fight, I'd be close to being them, I'd use the Spartan rage, but ultimately die. Then when I restarted, I'm sure I lost both the Resurrection Stone and my Spartan rage.
Rage. I don't for sure. Are you playing on the harder modes? I'm just playing on normal.
No.
Okay. That's weird.
Yeah,
that's
weird because I've definitely used my Resurrection Stone on multiple times without having to go in and buy a new one.
Me too. Are you playing on the PS5 as well, Jimbo?
Yeah, normal difficulty.
So you're
on PS5,
playing the same
yeah.
version. That's weird.
Yeah.
I need to pay more attention to it then. I still got quite a few of these left to do, so I'll pay more attention to that. But the Resurrection Stone, I'm not 100% sure on, but I'm just about certain with regard to the Spartan meter that if I've used that in a fight, because now I have to go off and rebuild this.
It'll be reset to the same place it was when you entered the fight. If you build up Spartan Rage in the fight and you didn't die, then you lose whatever you build up there.
Yeah.
So it'll be reset to the same point it was when you entered the fight.
Because I've gone into the first time I've gone into counter, I always try to make sure I've got a full Spartan meter.
Mm.
And then it's been the case where there have been a couple of times where I've had them quite close to death. And so I thought, right, now I'll use my Spartan attack. And then, because I didn't want to use it too early on in case I died, because I thought, well, then you've got to go off and rebuild it. So that's something to report back on next time.
Mm.
Yeah, it's not massively useful for kind of doing damage to the Valkyries, but it is useful because it will regenerate a little bit of health if you need it.
Also, if they're kind of within a few hits and you start to get if you're getting into shaky hands gaming territory where you're within a couple of hits and they're within a couple of hits, then it's quite good just to make yourself invincible for a few seconds while you're getting a few more hits.
Yeah, and the game's a bit cruel, actually. Have you noticed this, Mads, that like when you get the Valkyrie down to basically no health, it seems to be like you've got to reduce its health and then do a couple more attacks before you put it in. I was just about to say,
I had some really shaky hands, literally shaky hands gaming moments with air, because two or three times I had her down to like a sliver of health. Yeah. I swear one time I couldn't see her health bar.
Exactly.
And I went in for the kill and she killed me. And I was
And the great thing about these fights, most of them I've been on a tiny little bit of health when I've actually done it.
Yeah, me too.
So you get that real moment when you see that kind of red, the R3 mark come up again, you know the fight's over.
Yeah.
You've got no health yourself. Yeah, I don't know what it's like on hard. I mean, Morpin seems to be doing all right.
I wouldn't be able to do that at all.
Pretty exhilarating, like when you find, you know, this is not like a Dark Souls where you're going to take 3 or 4 hours to do it. You know, you'll figure out the patterns and then you'll do it. But it's always fun. There's a good payoff when you finally do it. And then you get a nice little cutscene with a little bit of story, and there's a little story about the Valkyries.
I was wondering, the story with the Valkyries progresses. I mean, we get to know more and more about Sigrun and so on. I guess the same story is actually being told, just with different Valkyries.
I was thinking about that because the last one I got was quite a big, you know, it was quite progressive in that story. And I was thinking, if I'd have done this first, it wouldn't have made any sense.
Have you been back to the council of the Valkyries?
Yeah.
I'm
guessing that's where they go when you beat them.
You've got to stick the hats on the seats.
Exactly. Yes. And then their ghosts or whatever, their spirit forms appears. Yeah, I put the seven there, but sadly I can't go to Niflheim. I've got no idea how to get there. So.
Yeah. And so Niflheim is a bit like Muspelheim, only very different.
Okay.
You've got to collect 4 runes or something, wasn't it?
These like mist echoes. It's almost like
I've got 2 so far.
Yeah, so to get there, but once you're there, it's a bit like a roguelite kind of area. I really didn't like it last time, and I didn't engage with it at all. Okay. But I'm determined to find and beat that final Valkyrie this time.
Yeah, me too. I want to see the end of that storyline. So, I need the mist echoes because I'm wearing Brock and Sindri's special armor, and that needs mist echoes to be upgraded.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I've got a couple of bits of their armor on. I think, and I've got a couple of the Valkyrie armors as well.
Okay,
where have you got that stuff from?
So the Valkyrie armor is just dropped by the Valkyries.
By
finishing all of their finding the old king, the old dwarven king's armor, and then making new stuff out of it.
You go off and find the whetstone, don't you?
I haven't finished that one. I haven't got the whetstone yet. I think it's somewhere up north that I have to now go and get.
Good fights there and some good storytelling. Yeah. So you should do that side quest with them.
Yeah. Mm. Well, my plan is basically to wrap up probably, I'm going to go off on a big frolic and wrap up all the side content and then just do a run off a straight run probably from this point that we're at in the story through to the end.
Yeah, I had a good frolic today. Has everyone found three dragons? I found two.
Yeah.
So I should have found the third dragon right now then.
Well, you find the third dragon when you do the final dwarf favour. Yes.
Ah, okay, cool. So I've not done that yet. Okay.
And that's what I'm the same then. I've only found two dragons. So
we already know that the Dwarven King was the one who captured those dragons.
Yeah.
So,
What's his name? Monsignor, is it?
I forget what
something like that, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, I enjoyed that area. Really enjoyed that area with the Dwarven King. And you fight that big troll at the end.
Mm.
Yeah. That final dwarf favour is really good.
Yes.
Like you go to like a whole, it's like almost like it's a bit like Vethelgard. Like it's quite a big area and there's two favors in one. So you've got the dragon and then you've got you finish off the dwarf storyline and it's excellent that bit. Really, really good.
Mm.
I think I've done all of the favors now in the game.
I've done everything I can right now with regards to the favors at least.
Have you found all the treasure maps, Mads, or are you not bothering with those?
I'm not bothering with those. I find a lot of them by accident, actually, just because I'm curious. So
yeah. So doing Muspelheim as well. I've done almost all of those. You know those. What are they called? You know, with the challenges, like kill like X number of Draugr, and so I've pretty much done all of them. Now they were triggering during those Muspelheim trials. They were triggering like. Complete, you've now killed 40 travelers or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
So I think I've got to kill two more wolvers and one more ogre, I think.
I went all the way through the Muspelheim challenges until you meet the Valkyrie and
yeah, me too.
But then when you beat the Valkyrie, the challenges are back or something like that?
Well,
you start some new challenges?
There's another rank, so you get impossible.
Okay, yeah. I thought I didn't want to mess with that. Doesn't sound fun. Because I liked Muspelheim challenges, by the way. Some of them were really good fun. And some of them were also actually, maybe just because they would grind you down over time and you had to be at it for like 10, 15 minutes, they got to be hard in the end. Like the one where you had to kill 100 enemies, once you sat there for 15 minutes and there were seven enemies left, you'd be shaking because you really don't want to lose this fight right now.
Yeah. The one I struggled with was the one where you can't take any damage.
Yeah, that took me a few goes as well. But
that was driving me nuts, because I kept getting hit by one of the Hell Walkers, you know, firing
I was just constantly jumping around. Rolling around the floor all the time and letting Atreus kill most of them.
Yeah. And the other one that I found difficult was killing them within the rings, you know, where you've got to get them.
Yeah.
But that was good fun, though, because
knocks them back. The
enemies weren't that hard in that area. So you could just like lure them to you and then unleash hell on them. That was good fun. I like that.
Yeah.
When we were talking on the previous episode, Chris, we were talking about Muspelheim and you said, oh, there's a good surprise at the end and a good reward. Were you referring to...
The Valkyrie.
Valkyrie. Okay, that's fine. Because I did wonder that having done that and then there was a subsequent set of challenges, I thought, I'm not sure I have the energy to go through this. So,
well, there is something, but it's a bit like... I forget what it is now, but when I looked at what you got for doing the impossible set, so like when you get the... in GTA 3 when you found all the pigeons and didn't he get a t-shirt to say I found all the pigeons or something stupid like that?
I don't know, I never found them all.
I think it's a bit like that.
Speaking of pigeons, are you going to get all the ravens?
Well, I've only got like six more to find.
This is what I was wondering, because I think you're seeing it without seeing it. I'm seeing and hearing a man who's going for a platinum here.
Yeah, no. That's what I'm thinking. The thing is, you don't know which ones you haven't got.
No, well, this is the problem.
So then you've got to scour that. I'm up to about like 30, I think.
So I've got it fired up on the portal here. So in Midgard, I've got 33 of 43. And I've found all of the ravens elsewhere. So I've got, there's 51 in the game in total.
So you know they're just in Midgard somewhere.
And I've got 10 more to find. But Midgard is a big place.
It is a big place.
And you can go into each area. Nah, I don't know. I don't think I've got the energy. Plus, I don't think I'm going to enjoy Niflheim. And to get the platinum, you've got to really rinse Niflheim.
Do you? Okay, what do you have? Okay, is
it? Well, you've got to do something in Niflheim. You've got to at least find a Valkyrie, obviously.
Right, yeah.
I might have a little look at it. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. But, like, I've got, you know, you look, I've done all of the favours. I've done all of those. I've got two more of those things. Of those, you know, those skill things left to do.
I had to go to the highest peak in an area or something like that. Those,
yeah,
those
where like
ones.
Pin them against the wall and stuff like that, or yeah. Shatter like X number of. I've got two more of those to do, but like, if you have to go and find all the artifacts, I'm not going to do that.
I don't think you do.
I don't know. I might have a little cheeky look. I've never platinumed a game.
But you shouldn't. It's a disease, mate. I'll send you. I can print you some pages of boxes you can tick off, and you can just do that instead.
You say that, Mads. You know, if Nintendo ever brought out trophies or whatever, you know, achievements, and they brought them out for like Ocarina of Time, I would 100% drop back into that game to go for a.
It's the perfect way to ruin a good game. For me, at least.
So I've got, on my gear, I've got the Dwarven Breastplate powered up twice. I've got the Dwarven Gauntlets powered up twice. And I've got the Waistguard of the Valkyrie powered up twice. And I've just, nice. I've got Strength 213, Defense 222.
Blimey, my stats are way lower than that.
Mine are quite a bit lower than that. Yeah, I think it's. I've got like the full set of the. Basically, the stuff that you collect in Muspelheim, is it the smouldering?
Yeah.
Ember stuff, which is very cool because it glows in the dark.
You get lots of great gear and lots of fantastic enchantments by fighting the Valkyries.
Yeah, you do.
So maybe that's where Chris and I have it from, because I'm pretty much at the same state, I think.
Well, now that I've seen that, but like, I would like to finish the game in a full set of Valkyrie armor. That sort of feels like the coolest stuff to be wearing.
The problem is the Dwarven armor is more, depending on what you're looking to max out, of course. But if you're, my build is mainly defense, so I've been plowing anything that improves my defense, I equip it.
I think the Valkyrie armor is very, very high in defense, aren't they?
The Dwarven armor.
No, the Valkyrie one is
very
high in defense.
Yeah, both the Dwarven armor and the Valkyrie armor. Okay. Yeah, both high in defense, yeah. But it's, to be honest, I feel like you we said this last time, you get so many of these things, like that the returns were diminishing a long time ago, and now I find like there's nowhere left now for a big step up. Like, you know, every time I open a chest, I don't really care now what's in there, because the only things I've not maxed out my health or my rage meter though, and there's people on Discord talking
There is an achievement for that as well. I've seen
I think I've maxed maybe the health. I think it's my health I've maxed.
Okay, I haven't, so.
And in order to fully power up your axe and your Blades of Chaos, I'm missing one upgrade for both of them, as I suspect we all are, because they're all on the critical path. They're in Niflheim. And that is definitely a trophy linked to those, fully upgrading those. And I didn't do it last time, and I suspect it's because I took one look at Niflheim and hightailed it.
Niffled off.
Niffled off.
Because there's no regenerating enemies, then I assume there's only a finite number of points within the game, assignable points for upgrading stuff.
What do you mean?
It's not like maybe in Dark Souls where if you wanted to, you could just keep going back into areas and fighting enemies and building up enough points.
I think they do regenerate.
I think they do, because I went back into an area today. And it was an area that I'd been in. It was when I was looking for the second dragon. So it was an area that I'd already been in.
Yeah.
And enemies were coming back. Yeah. I was like, I'd cleared this all out.
Okay.
Yeah,
so
they will come back if you go away.
Material drops and everything.
Yeah, they were dropping materials.
Pack silver and...
Okay. I guess it's whether or not you'd get enough of, if enemies keep dropping enough high end stuff to.
It wasn't the top level enemies. It was more the sort of cannon fodder enemies that came back.
I mean, the encounters now, even on the critical path, you know, these enemies are dropping like 7,000 hack silver. And
it's quite a difference from the start of the game, isn't it?
I had like 200,000 hack silver for the longest time. And I don't know what I bought, because I don't look at the prices anymore. I just buy upgrades. But yesterday I went down to 3,000. I've got almost nothing left.
And I started selling off some of my old armor to raise money.
Yeah.
And we said last time, you know, oh, Hacksilver's the currency stupid because, you know, we've got so much of it.
Yep.
I actually started selling off some of the old armor because I wanted to get. But the upgrades now are like 80,000 Hacksilver.
Yeah. I think I need to start selling off some of the old gear as well then.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. I've got all of, I mean, I maxed out, it felt like I maxed out the skill tree a long time ago.
Yeah, me too.
So I've got
the
no
XP
use.
Is pointless.
What's the point of experience points now? I mean,
yeah.
I don't know. I don't feel like, the only thing I do now is every time I pick up a new runic attack, and I still seem to be picking up runic attacks quite a bit, I just immediately upgrade them to level 3, even if I'm not going to use it just for something.
Can you upgrade the runic attacks?
Oh, mate, don't.
I didn't know.
You have to equip them though before, so you can upgrade them, don't you?
Yeah, but you can upgrade them twice. It makes a huge difference. Yeah.
So that garden hose or fire hose can be even more deadly.
Oh Lord! So you can upgrade it twice, and then you can get an artifact that extends its duration by about 15 seconds.
I mean, I used it, as I said, in that fight, and I'm pretty sure it took like almost a quarter or something like that, a fifth of her health just with one shot. So I thought that was enough.
I think I need to get this.
It absolutely mullers. Any non-boss enemy, it will just kill them.
Okay.
Yeah, because I think that's what Open was saying, isn't it? He's basically rigged his setup for minimizing your cooldowns so that you can
just use
that. And then you've basically just got to run around until it recharges and not die, and then use it again and then go run away bravely again.
It's about 40 seconds it takes to recharge. And I've also, you know, the L1 and circle thing. What do they call that? You know,
Do you
know what I mean? That other thing you can do.
You can make yourself temporarily invincible, can't you?
Well, I've got this thing which slows time. So I've run up to a Valkyrie, basically freeze her in place and then get my Hells of Death out. And I feel like
it's your talisman, isn't it? It's your talisman.
That's right, your talisman.
Yeah. Ever the sporting fighter there, Chris?
No.
Right, I'm just going to freeze you and pin you in place whilst I hose you to death.
They've got nowhere to go.
So I think this is, because I took photographs earlier on of almost, this is where I'm falling down. So I'm still using the common green one that I've fully upgraded, but...
Oh, mate, you need...
I need to start fiddling with my armour, don't I?
Yeah. That's like the lowest...
Yeah,
you're a Destiny player. What are you doing using the green armour?
I'm just making it more difficult.
He's been frugal.
Yeah. Especially he's a real man. He doesn't use the fire hose.
That's for Dark Souls, aren't I?
Yeah.
You should do a bare-handed grunge.
I'm doing a Morpin. All low-level gear.
Mate, I reckon if you start playing around with the armor, you'll be...
Yeah, I'm sure.
You'll notice a big difference because it affects like your damage output as well, your level. You'll be going Ken Shamrock.
I'm going to have a fiddle, aren't I? Get them blue gloves on.
So what are you guys going to do then? So my plan really is now, I mean, I'm going to mainline it until I unlock Niflheim. And then I'm going to give that a go to find that Valkyrie. And then probably just mainline it then to the end of the game. Because I feel like I've done all the favours. Mm. I've done as much of the other kind of bits, collectible stuff, as I can probably want to. What are your strats for? Are you going to frolic some more, or are you just going to mainline it now?
A bit of frolicking.
Yeah.
I think, Jim, it sounds like maybe you and Mads are on a fairly level pegging, and I think Jim and I maybe are as well, in the sense that... Story-wise, I think we're all at the same point, but
yeah,
there's quite a bit of the additional side content that I've yet to do. A couple of bits I maybe didn't realise that I had access to now by this point, things like with the whetstone and the extra, you know, going and finding that third dragon. So, the we said this the last time around, the nice thing about this game is that there's always something to be doing.
Yeah.
And I find it when I sit down to play a session, I'll probably start off frolicking, and then I'll feel like maybe I've had enough, and then I'll probably go and do a chapter.
Yeah.
Or, you know, I mean, story mission or whatever.
Yeah, and then something else will open up, or, you know, it's a bit like, you know, there's an element of, You know, the whole Metro, like gated exploration here, isn't it? Like you might get, you know, like the Blades of Chaos allowed a little bit more and the Winds of Hell allow a little bit more. And
And the nice thing is that if I feel, because obviously we're trying to get as much out of this as possible, if I feel I'm progressing too quickly, then I'll stop with the main story and go off and do a bit of frolicking because I'm ready to wrap it up soonish, but I've just been enjoying the game so much I don't really, I'm not in a desperate rush to, you know, we said this previously, I don't want it to outstay its welcome, but it I don't think there's any danger of it doing that because any point it could be finished in a very low number of hours from this point.
I suspect so, a couple of hours.
I still want to go and finish off the dwarven armor. I've got to go over to, I think, Conan's Guard stronghold.
It's good.
That. Yeah, so I've got to go there. Then I'm guessing I'll unlock the third dragon from doing that. Yeah.
That bit is really good. That section, well worth. Yeah. There's loads to do there.
Cool.
Well, my plan is exactly like yours, Chris. I want to get to Niflheim, and I was thinking about just doing a bit of frolicking to look for those keys. But I think you're right. Just mainline the story, and you'll probably find the keys, and then go back to Niflheim instead.
I mean, I wouldn't know where to start to look. That's the problem.
Me neither. But I have to say this: I am really, really enjoying this game. This game has made me. It's the first thing since I had my analog 3D that actually made me put it aside. So I haven't been playing on my analog 3D for 2 weeks now because I'm playing, whenever I have time to play a game, I want to play God of War. So Ocarina of Time, I love it, but it's
oh, on. Oh no, he's stuck again. He's on hold. Start again.
I haven't even gotten as far as I did last time. I'm still a kid. So I'm on the, where was I? I'm in the Sora domain. I need to get that part of the crystal or whatever it is you get to begin with, right?
You're nearly grown up.
I'm nearly grown up. Yeah, I need to get that third part, and then I'm loving playing with my analog 3D. And I today looked at it and thought I need to get back to that soon. But this game has just kept me away. So that's a testament to how much fun I've been having with this.
How many hours do you reckon you've put into God of War? It's difficult to say because there's no game clock, is there? But
I think Steam says 35.
My PlayStation says 30.
Yeah.
Yes, I'm 80 hours across both playthroughs now. Mm. So I reckon I've put just as much time into it this time. I reckon I'm about 35 to 40 hours on this playthrough.
Yeah.
And I've probably got a few more left. I reckon I've got another 5 or 6 hours left, including the frolicking around Niflheim and the Valkyries. Mm-hmm. I think we could probably finish the story from the end of this section, which we haven't got to yet in the podcast, but we're going to get to in a minute. I reckon there's about 2 hours of story content left.
Oh, really? Is that all?
Yeah.
I'm a bit afraid of actually facing the final Valkyries because they actually, what's been driving, I mean, the story is good, but the Valkyries and the battles with the Valkyries is what been having the most fun with. Yeah. So if I kill both the last Valkyrie and Niflheim and Sigrun, I think I need to finish the game first and then go back and do that. To give the story some proper attention, so I don't just.
Oh, the end of the story is really good though, and it's like from now as well. Like the story kind of pulls you along, you know. Like I feel like once we go back to the game and you start this next section,
You're not really going to want to take a break. And
no, I think you. I think there are bits when you can jump off and frolic, but it's kind of railroading you now at this stage. With the pace,
you've got that urgency.
Yeah, and as you know, when there is urgency in the storytelling, I hate frolicking because it just completely breaks the immersion for me. So
I'm really enjoying it. I kind of don't want it to finish, really. But
it's been good.
The nice thing about this is we know there's a sequel
that's another banger. So
exactly that.
Chris and I decided the next game is going to be my game, so we don't just jump from brawler to brawler, right, Chris?
Morpin thinks it's Minecraft, but you wouldn't do that to us, would you, mate?
Never, God. Never.
Roblox.
Roblox?
Yes. All Roblox games. That's what I'm picking.
Good. Well, regardless of Valkyries, builds, all that sort of stuff, was there anything else you wanted to discuss or anything else you hadn't had a chance to talk about yet? Shout out as we go through the story part if you want to. We can come back to it at the end.
Just one other question, and then you can get back into the story then.
Yeah.
Have you guys kind of gone back to the other realms to frolic? Have you kind of gone back to clear out Alfheim and Helheim?
I have, and I think this may be where there's we're talking about how it's quite cool how the game's done in one take, effectively, but it's a wee bit annoying when you're going between realms.
Yes. That's one of the things that puts me off Muscle Fine.
Yeah.
What did you say?
Muscle Fine? What's it called?
Try again.
Yeah.
You've got the wrong audience for that. Mads will have you.
Sorry, Jim.
You can't fast travel there, can you? You've got to go.
That's a Danish website, I think, Muscle Hype.
Mads is on the front page. Where?
Muscle Fine.
Yeah. I can't remember what I was saying now. Yeah, you can't fast travel there. You've got to go back to Midgard. Then into the tree, and then it's just annoying.
And then it has to go through its little sequence where it was great the first couple of times, but it's actually annoying in the background.
Can you fast travel between the realms without using the tree?
No.
Okay. So you need to do that for all the different, like going to Alfheim and Muspelheim.
So I did that a couple of times just when I was, I think it must have been maybe when I got the Chaos Blades. I thought I'll just do a quick round and see what I've got access to now. And I think by the second time they'd gone to a new realm, so effectively the third realm on the session I was playing, I was like, no, I'm done with this. I do not need to be going. So I you know, there we'll see where we're at the end of it all as to whether or not I want to revisit places. But
so for frolicking, I find Alfheim annoying because it's so big and empty. You waste a lot of time looking to see if something would be there. And it's only because I found out that I needed to go to those other places, other realms to find the missing Valkyries that I started looking, because I don't really enjoy that part.
I went back into Alfheim and I felt that I maybe couldn't access areas that I'd gone into previously.
Yep. There really isn't that much to see.
And maybe it wasn't, that's the thing, but maybe just when you were playing it and when you had a few of the cinematics and stuff as well, maybe the area felt bigger than what it actually is, but... Yeah, I went back
there's
like
lots of areas in Alfheim that you can't access anymore, isn't there?
You can't go back into the temple-y bit.
No, for example, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but even without that, though, there's a lot of real estate in Alfheim that doesn't have a lot there. I mean, I've 100% at Alfheim. And really, I mean, it takes a good 5 minutes to even get to the lake, maybe even more.
Yeah, and you need to be rowing for a long time.
Yeah,
that's still not got any better.
So it's not. Yeah, it's. I wonder. It'll be interesting when we play Ragnarok to see whether they've.
If we play Ragnarok, I wonder who's got the
fishing rights for those waters and who's actually on the board for that.
Jim's on the board for the he's on the fishing board. So. Yep.
Probably again.
If there's a fishing council, Jim's on it.
Yes.
The Valkyries, Council of the Valkyries, Council of the Anglers.
I want to see when we go to Arcade Club, you should dress as a Valkyrie, Jim.
Or as a fish.
Absolutely not. Or a fish. Big fish.
Fish Valkyrie.
Sorry, Andy.
Are you guys happy to pick back up with the story then?
Yeah.
Where were we?
So we just come back up from Tears
Vault. What's a podcast?
It's certainly not this, that's for sure. having exited Tears Vault now, we return to service and start to make our way to the Jotunheim Gateway. And on the way there, we meet Sindri. And right away, having been... Obviously, him and Atreus. Atreus was the one who has always been quite sympathetic towards the dwarves and always been quite interested to hear their stories, etc. In a complete change of approach to them, he basically says his stories are boring, and he's like, "You and your brother, blah 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 blah." They're little people's problems, and
it's awful.
He absolutely cuts him down. Like Sindri, he looks absolutely crestfallen. Sindri sort of shuffles off and
says something along the lines of "We gods can't be bothered
with that. We don't concern ourselves with your little problems or whatever." Yeah. And most telling of all, then Kratos pulls him up on it and says to him, "You know, what would your mother think of this behavior?" And Atreus replies that her opinion wouldn't matter because she's just a mortal.
Yep. And this was what I was talking about when I said the writing almost killed it for me for a while there, because it was so bad. That was 5 minutes after he was the nicest kid on the planet,
and
then we go here in the split second. It was horrible.
They just had that really nice conversation in the vault, and it's just gone in one ear and straight out.
Yeah, it almost felt like things were a wee bit out of sequence in some respects.
If that had been a gradual descent, it could have been great, but it just wasn't. And that's what killed it for me. And then he does even worse things in 2 minutes. It's it's horrible.
The only case that the defense would make, and I said this on Discord, is that I feel like there's quite a lot of characterization they have to put into Atreus in quite a relatively short amount of, because you don't obviously get any of it when you're frolicking. So it's all kind of the story stuff. Mm-hmm. It's quite a lot. And I wonder, I said this, whether they might have been better doing the reveal to Atreus earlier in the game to give it a little bit more room for kind of Atreus' character to maybe kind of be a bit more gradual. Because Matt, you're spot on. I mean, if you're mainlining this, 5 minutes earlier, they're doing that whole with the drink. Yeah. You know, it is jarring. His change.
Yeah, and I think even up until that point, he'd already shown a couple of suggestions that he wasn't a particularly nice person at that point as well. And then, like you see, they had this nice moment with Kratos, and it's back to him not being nice again. But I think it is just probably a consequence of having very little time, because that is what's become apparent, is that if you just do the main story missions, each mission is not particularly long, is it?
No.
Because just even looking at what we're going to cover off on here.
But I do think they do a nice job of showing him like he's seeing his actions when they go to Helheim, and it sort of takes him back a little bit. I think they do a really good job of that.
It's just all so quick though, mate. That's the problem.
Yeah.
I mean, it all happens in the space of about 2 hours.
Yeah.
Like if you're mainlining it, and it all just feels like it crashes into you a little bit, I think. And it's,
should have padded the story here so that he could have a gradual descent into madness instead, or they should have had the reveal a lot earlier in the game.
Yeah.
So that he could just gradually come to where he was and then come to his senses after seeing it in Helheim, as you say, Jim. That's great. That's well written, I think. But it's just also jarring because it's very hard to believe that he changes that quickly both times, because it's just happening within a few hours, right?
It's 0-100 in it on both.
Yeah, exactly.
It's in this section, this return to the summit, where he's particularly annoying.
Mm, yes.
He's very bratty. And so having actually shot down Sindri and made him feel like the smallest man on the planet for multiple reasons, he's then they continue their journey on towards Jotunheim, and as they're coming their way through the chambers there, I think it was it Doradur, whoever it was, the stag that was on the throne there. They once again stopped by Modi, but he's in a bad way, having been very badly beaten by Thor, who's held him responsible for Magni's death. And despite the fact he's clearly weakened and effectively collapsed on the ground, Atreus basically wants to set about him, and Kratos says he's not worth it. He's basically like, he's defeated. There's no honor in killing somebody in a state like this.
Yeah.
But Modi obviously had an insight to it earlier and starts to goad Atreus a little bit, and it's enough to make him snap, and he runs across and stabs him in the neck and then kicks him off the little precipice down onto the ravine below. And clearly, you know, Kratos, he plays his cards quite close to chest. He's obviously absolutely horrified by his actions, but I thought he was quite sort of reserved almost in...
He was. He didn't react enough in this.
No, that was it. Given how against it he was, then there was very, and then I think Atreus literally skipped off and says whatever again, doesn't he? So, and you're like, okay, fair enough, this is point made. But and Kratos makes the point that killing gods especially is a big no-no in their world with some potentially huge consequences.
That's it, he says, yeah, doesn't he? There'll be repercussions, I think he says.
Yep.
This is where we get the watch your tone boy line, isn't it? He repeated it at the Game Awards, I think, didn't he, Christopher Judge? Didn't he say it to the actor of Atreus or something? It's a great line.
So they press forward and you reach the gate to Jotunheim, where Kratos etches the rune required, and the gateway opens at last. And just as they're about to enter, they can see into the gate, and they can see the true highest peak. That's what they've been trying to find all this time. But just as they're about to step through, Baldur comes barreling in and stops them. And there's kind of quite a big ensuing scrap between all of them, effectively. Mm. But in the process of that, the bridge or the gateway to Jotunheim gets destroyed. And Atreus is desperate to fight, but he's told not to by Kratos. And but by this point, this is probably Atreus at his worst, where he just has completely lost it and is just driven by this rage and desire to fight. And he ends up actually shooting his dad with one of the lightning arrows to stun him, so that he can then go and attack Baldur and stabs him in the arm with his knife. But obviously, for reasons we know previously, is that Baldur doesn't really feel any pain. And not just that, he's, I think, a very different prospect to what Modi was as well, and effectively just laughs it off and removes the knife and then stabs Atreus back, and ultimately carries Atreus under his arm and jumps from the mountain onto his dragon that's down below, which is very cool. There's quite a good bit there where then there's this, effectively it's kind of a combination of a bit of a cinematic, a QTE, where you're fighting Baldur on the back of the dragon, and it's a combination of blocking, attacking and dodging, really, isn't it, as you work your way up the dragon. And it finally ends there with the Kratos gets knocked off the dragon, and then you see in the background the dragon crashing close by anyway. And I think it still had Baldur and Atreus were still on the dragon at that point, weren't they? So they crash in sort of the near distance, and they end up inside Tyr's temple, where they're in the realm travel room, and Baldur's trying to lock it in to take them to Asgard. So I think basically that would allow, I assume that was his intention to go to Asgard, or was it to basically allow reinforcements from Asgard to come in?
Yeah, I think it's the gates being locked off, hasn't it, to stop Odin coming through, I think it was.
Right.
Is that right? And so if he wants to open it,
Is it to stop someone coming through? He's the boss of this place. That sounds weird.
Did
Tyr see him in Asgard or something?
Yeah.
I thought Tyr sealed the route to Jotunheim so that the Asgardians couldn't go and kill the giants.
Odin was coming to torture Mimir, wasn't he, when he was...
Yeah, exactly. Odin and his guys, yeah.
Yeah. So I think Baldur wants to open the gate to Asgard to then allow...
I think he's just going back there with the... He says that he needs Atreus. He says something along the lines of, all this time it turns out I don't need you, to Kratos. It was the boy I needed. And then he wants to bring the boy back to Odin, right?
Yeah. Exactly that. So, and as the two of them are struggling for control of the room and the realm travel, Kratos manages to change the course by... He sticks a Bifrost in it, and it basically changes to Helheim instead. And all three of them end up getting sucked into the realm and are now in... sort of now end up in Helheim, where Baldur's ended up in a separate area. Kratos and Atreus are together again, and they are now trying to basically find a way back out of Helheim for a second time, really. So they see a boat that they can use to return to Tyr's temple, but it's sort of going to require a little bit of lateral thinking to get there. So
There's a bit just a quick point to make here. There's quite a bit of retracing old ground in this section. I mean, I know we're not traveling through the same Helheim as we did first time around, and but things like the way back to the summit. You know, yes, it was an opportunity to frolic, but I felt like we were going through areas that we'd already been through. I felt a little bit of fatigue in this little bit, just being like, okay, I feel like I've been here before. I don't know whether you guys felt that.
I actually kind of liked it. So quite the opposite. I like when space is actual space in video games. The fact that we had to go all the way and climb all the way back up the summit made the summit more real.
Okay.
If you catch my drift. I played, back in the day, played World of Warcraft, for example. There was no quick travel. The quickest quick travel was getting on the back of a griffin, and you knew it would fly you to this place. But you'd have to watch it fly you over all of the other areas and see where you're going in the world. And I like that because it anchors you in the world. I actually thought, just like you did, this is just going through the motions, but I kind of liked it.
Okay. Yeah, I get it. Interestingly, in Helheim, when you come across things like the, I think there's a couple of what would be legendary chests, but they don't trigger, they don't count towards the Helheim. It's almost like this bit of Helheim is like a little bit of an area that doesn't count for any of the Helheim things that you can collect. It's like its own little area.
Yeah, I guess you can't go back to it, can you? Maybe that's why.
No, that's it. Yeah, so anything you miss in here is gone.
Yes, but you don't need any of this stuff for 100% completion.
Okay.
That's good to know.
Not that I'm going to be
starting our files all over again as soon as we've finished recording this podcast. It's like, going to start again. No choice.
No pigeons in Helheim.
there's no pigeons, mate.
As you're working your way out, I think probably the key event that you get in Helheim is that the Atreus and Kratos are climbing around the rock face, and they see Baldur, so real world Baldur, but I think he's having a vision, his version of hell, of his past, and they basically learn, well, this is where they learn that he's the son of Freya. And then it also transpires that when she made him invincible, she inadvertently had robbed him of all feelings, so he can't feel any pleasure, tastes, anything like that. So
it's all bullshit, mate. All bullshit.
I guess they had to come up with a reason. So
funny thing about Baldur, I think funny, at least you probably won't, but he was stabbed in the arm, right, by Atreus. That can't happen because that's what the whole magic of Baldur is all about. Apart from the fact that he can be hurt by mistletoe and is already dead because he was killed by his brother, his mother, Frigg, went and asked every single thing in the world, even the rocks that this knife was built of, to promise that they'd never hurt Baldur. So nothing could hit him. You could shoot arrows at him and they'd just fly away. You could try to hit him with a sword and it would break or fall to the other side. So you can't stab Baldur. That's just nonsense.
Yeah.
I thought it was that he just didn't feel pain.
No, there's nothing about not feeling pain because nothing could deal pain to him.
Okay.
So there was nothing about not feeling or nothing about anything. He's just invincible, completely invincible. But the mistletoe didn't promise not to... actually, the mistletoe... Mistletoe wasn't even asked because it was such a small plant. So she thought that it could probably never hurt him anyway. So it was the only thing in the entire universe, you know, in the Nine Realms that wasn't asked.
Oh, so that's why she reacts so badly to the mistletoe earlier.
Because the mistletoe is the only thing that wasn't asked. And when she sees arrows made of mistletoe, of course, that's a danger for her son.
Was it the dwarf that... I can't remember who it was now.
Yeah,
was it the
Sindri.
Dwarf that Sindri that gave him the... That's it, yeah.
Interesting.
Really early in the game, that, as well.
Mm. Yes. Yeah. So I think this is kind of what the point they're making here is that in its vision, we see a younger Baldur basically pleading with his mother for the curse, what he views as a curse, to be removed. But she's refusing because she thinks it's the only way to protect her son, and it's ultimately what causes him to to loathe his mother, but also probably is what leads to his descent into madness. And the it's also probably maybe the point at which it starts to bring Atreus back around as well, because he sees this playing out. And I think, to me at least, it read that he was realizing that, you know, even though he's a god, you're not immune from the problems of what can come from estranged, you know, being estranged from family, and perhaps sees it as a warning over his the potential relationship with his own father, where that could be. I mean, he obviously still very much, you know, very much loves his father, and he doesn't want to end up in this situation. But it seems to be from that point onwards that he is much more on board with his dad and his way of, you know, it seems a lot happier to fall in line with his dad.
I know there were some of the visions from Helheim that led to him getting better, but I also thought the fact that he by accident shot his own dad with some arrows just to get his way and get to fight Baldur is probably what shocked him, that he was able to do that.
I think so.
Because he's responsible for breaking the Jotunheim
the bridge
as well, isn't he?
Bridge.
Because I think also you see that in the vision, was Baldur not about to kill his mother?
Yes. Yep, he was.
And yeah, I think her back's turned to him, I think, isn't she? Or she's kneeling down, I think. And he was going to stab her, I think, or hit her, wasn't he?
Yeah, and then he doesn't anyway. And the real Baldur calls Ghost Baldur a coward, right?
Yes. Yeah, that's it. Yeah. And I think that'll probably be the point that most resonates with Atreus, because obviously he's just shot his dad with an arrow, and he's probably thinking, well, it's not too much of a stretch to think that if I continue on this path, I may actually end up killing my father. So the whole point is that we get to this ship where we have to raise some sails, and we light two deck fires that we have to keep burning whilst we're attacked by numerous waves of enemies. And this is basically Kratos' ingenious idea of using the sails and the heat that's coming off these fires to effectively turn it into a flying ship as you fly on out of Helheim. And I quite liked this. It was good fun.
Yeah, it's
very, very cinematic. I loved it.
Totally. And then you've got the big anchors coming over the side trying to grab you down and then wave. And there was definitely a few points where you felt under pressure, where you were trying to fight a wave of enemies at one end, and then the fire
and some
was going
of those
out,
wraiths or whatever they were that shoot ice would put out the fire, so you have to rush down there and turn it on again with the Blades of Chaos.
Yeah.
And presumably there's a fail state if both fires go out. You know, presumably that's game over.
It must be.
I thought it went on a little bit.
I think it did.
Yes.
And do you know what? I've got very vivid memories about parts of this game, and I can pretty much tell you exactly what happens at the end, and I've got very, very clear memories of some parts. I had completely forgotten about this bit, though.
Same.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Funny. You'd think it'd be quite memorable. It's very cinematic.
It's so cinematic. So
I think it's really cool. Yeah, it's a really cool scene, isn't it?
I don't know what it is about. It just didn't stick in my mind.
Yeah. Maybe it was too much of just a flashy roller coaster ride, and more forgettable than
the
actual
plot points. It's very gamey, isn't it? You know, Mamiya saying, "Oh, the fire's gone out," and over you go again. I think, as Jim said, I think it did outstay its welcome a little bit.
Yeah, you're probably doing the same thing over and over. I think a little bit too much, but as it draws an end, I think one of Kratos' visions that he's seeing whilst in hell is his final battle with Zeus, his father, and him ultimately killing him. And
I'm guessing that's from one of the previous games.
It's the third one, isn't it?
Okay.
Yeah, so again, just one of these little throwbacks that where you know, if you were familiar with the series, it would be a nice little bit of fan service. He's sort of somewhat distracted by that, and the ship is crashing, but he's kind of preoccupied with this, and it's actually Atreus that snaps him out of it, and they now have to abandon ship and leap off the ship and end up bursting through the roof of a building, which is one of Odin's hidden temples. But I think it was at this point this might be what I was thinking about rather than the Vaz. Was it at this point where does Kratos ask Atreus if he saw that vision?
And yes.
And I think Atreus says no. So is that the case, do you think? Or was Atreus saying that to him because he thinks that's what his dad needs to hear?
Yeah, I think that's how I read it.
Yeah, that's how I read it as well, yeah.
Yeah.
And by the way, that battle is at the end of God of War 3, and that is, it was in Olympus, and he beats Zeus to death with his fists, and that basically destroys the Greek world of the gods, and that's why he then fled to Norse godland.
Okay. Yeah, I've got to play the original games, I think.
Yeah, God of War 3 is very cinematic. It's PS3 game and it looks amazing.
You can get a collector's pack, can't you, with them on the PS3 that runs, so the PS2 games run at like 60 frames and stuff.
Yeah, but you need to play them on the PS2.
Right? Exactly, mate. They're PS2 games. Don't PS2 talk games. About that.
Play them on the PS3 with trophies in it.
Now, you guys might need to help me here because, so that's as far, I can't remember, because I don't want to go too far and end up spoiling it. So there was one final revelation at the end. Is that right?
Give us a clue.
So we've crashed into a hidden temple, haven't we?
Yeah.
And we haven't yet so the staging point would be where there's basically one last wall freeze that they see, isn't there?
Yeah, I think you should cover that, mate, because I think we probably all played to the end.
Yeah, I went through there so that I could do a bit of frolicking.
Yeah, so this is one of Odin's hidden temples, isn't it? And you come in here and you discover at this point that, well, it's actually Mimir, isn't it? Where you can see, was it Tyr that was on the...
Oh, you mean we find Tyr's the missing fragment of the tablets from Tyr? Yes.
Yeah, that he'd been traveling to all the different realms.
Yeah.
But we knew that already, right?
Yeah, but we didn't know that he had a hidden path to Jotunheim.
No, exactly. And that Odin has been studying this tablet or whatever it is to find that hidden path to Jotunheim.
Exactly.
But he couldn't find it.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly that. And because I think it's at the start of the next chapter that there's sort of quite a key reveal, so I don't want to say too much because it's I want to make sure that people kind of enjoy from this point onwards, but that effectively brings us up to the end of chapter 12. I know there wasn't a huge amount to cover from a plot point of view, but
it's quite dense though.
But it was just really to kind of, the reason for this extra episode was primarily just to give us a wee bit of time to chat about things like, you know, the Valkyries, some of the builds and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
But
And that's a massive part of it as well, isn't it?
Definitely.
An hour and three quarters. So there was definitely a good reason to split it up, mate. That was good.
Yeah, otherwise it'd be a 4-hour episode to finish.
No one wants that.
No.
What it means in the next one as well, because you preview the next game, don't you, as well? So.
Yeah, well, there's a lot to talk about with the ending because there'll be a
Our next game, not the next game in the series.
Sorry, yes.
Yeah.
There'll be a lot to unpack with the ending as well, and it'll be good to get Mads' take on what, you know, the revelations and whatnot. And I think there'll be plenty to unpack next time. Plus, we'll hopefully get to talk a bit about Niflheim and finishing off the Valkyrie stuff and you guys finishing off the dwarf favours as well.
Yeah,
exactly. We'll cover as much of it as we can, and you know, we'll give it the time it deserves. Hopefully, it won't run too long, but there'll be enough to cover in the next one for sure.
Some Discord clips,
a few of those to add on in. So, if we'll be putting out the request for that in the Discord channels quite soon, but I guess probably where are we now? This is the 10th. Yeah, Pop. I guess sometime in the next couple of weeks we'll be wrapping it up and recording the final episode. But
Jimbo, you say we reveal what games we'll be playing next. Are we going to be doing... We need a waffle episode for that, don't we? So after this, there'll be a waffle episode where we reveal all of the games for the next
episode. Of course there would, yeah. Right? Yeah. Yes.
You're
So we've only been doing it 5 years, Jim. Don't you mind?
You're doing yourself out of a waffle here, Jim. It's So from this point onwards, you are free. Nothing is off limits anymore. The shackles are off. So fly, my pretties, and go and enjoy all the frolicking. Go and enjoy finishing off the story, all of that, and hopefully, I think quite often with some games, by this point in the game, it's sometimes maybe started to run out of a wee bit of momentum, or there's a little bit of fatigue that's set in. I don't feel I'm at that point with this game yet. So
no.
I really hope that it just carries us on for the next few chapters and, manages to stick the landing, which is something that, not every game we've played has managed to do. So it'll be a very interesting final discussion when we get around to it. But anything else that you guys would like to cover? Anything else that you'd find in your travels that you want to discuss, and or just even any little funny happenings within the game that we haven't had a chance to talk about yet?
Not this time. I'll tell you what it looks like to get 100% completion on the next episode.
I want that platinum in the next episode.
He's downplaying it. You know for a fact that it's on its way.
What are the games to play, man?
Yeah, I know, but look at you're so close. It's happening, Chris. It's happening. Gents, anything else you would like to, or any shout outs, any thank yous, any mentions to anybody particularly?
Just the usual shout out. See above, see before.
Yeah,
we'll do some nice thank yous at the end of the last one, eh?
For sure we will. But the Discord channel is staying as active as ever. It's lovely. It's looks like it's sort of certainly largely resonated with most people who have been playing it.
And still new people coming in as well, starting the game.
Yeah, definitely. And there's a couple of folk just that have come and introduced themselves as well in recent weeks. So welcome to anybody who's new to the Discord. And we will. Well, I'll tell you what we'll need to do, in fact, is let's get this wrapped up and finished up before we go to Arcade Club.
Yes, defo.
Which would be, where are we now? That will be 2 weeks on Friday, isn't it? So I guess maybe 2 weeks from now-ish, we'll look to get the episode done. I'll get the episode out, and then we're basically free to go and enjoy Arcade Club.
Knowing that a waffle is in our sights.
So it's probably worth pointing out, we are absolutely open to bribery. So whoever buys us the most beers will get their choice of game in the next season. Oh, they will with me, at least. So it's I don't know about the others, but by all means, you buy me beers and I'll pick whatever game you want.
Yeah. And for all the Discord peeps, if you're listening, if you've listened this far, do consider recording a 2-3 minute clip about God of War for us for the next episode. It's always good fun when you get to add some of your stories as well.
Yeah, it'd be nice. Yeah, we've had enough people playing. It'd be good to get a handful of just other people's perspectives to include in the wrap-up.
Yep.
Yeah, definitely. Yep, exactly.
And start petitioning for my game being the first of next season.
Good, gents. Well, in that case, I will love you and leave you for now. I'll speak to you within a couple of weeks, and I will see you in just over a couple of weeks. So looking forward to it.
Excited.
Stay well, everybody. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll catch up soon. All the best for now.
Cheers, mate. Bye-bye.
Cheers. Bye.
Bye-bye.